In terms of the specific targets of those two TKIs, how are they similar and different?
They're similar in some respects because they inhibit the same spectrum to a certain degree, that spectrum being the receptors for vascular endothelial growth factor and platelet-derived growth factor, but they're dissimilar because they have different strengths with which they provide that inhibition, and sorafenib also inhibits a protein called RAF1, which it was originally designed to. They're what we call dirty kinase inhibitors, that is, they have multiple targets. In reality, when we look at all of these, and Gleevec is one, Gleevec was sort of the prototype, and it doesn't only inhibit one kinase, it inhibits multitude of kinases, as does the new drug soon to be approved by the FDA, dasatinib from Bristol-Myers, another Gleevec-type drug for chronic myelogenous leukemia. But they don't inhibit just one kinase, there are multiple. And it may well be in kidney cancer that we were fortunate that these drugs inhibited more than one in a very powerful fashion, because it then perhaps allowed some of the effects that we're seeing on the tumors to occur. Now, what we can explain, what's interesting to speculate on, is why the two drugs are so different clinically. One has a very high percentage of patients whose tumors shrink with it. The other one has a lower percentage of patients whose tumors shrink. And whether it's related to the chemistry and how tightly they bind to certain receptors, or whether there are other factors that come into account here with regard to their pharmacokinetics or other receptors that are inhibited, we yet don't recognize, not certain. It's an interesting situation where the small molecules have reproducible effects, but they are very different at times.
What would you speculate that would be seen if there was a head-to-head comparison of sorafenib and sunitinib as first-line therapy?
It probably would be done by the cooperative groups or in Europe, because that's really the standard of care question now. What should we use at this point in time? I think they would come out pretty close. I think one of the issues revolves around side effect profile and which is the easier to take and for how long. The other is which is more powerful in terms of its effect on the surrogates for clinical benefit, the surrogates being delaying progression of the cancer or improving survival. Because response, although it's important, is not the endpoint we have to focus on. It's not relevant to improvement for patients. It's more,
I guess, unless they're symptomatic.
Unless they're symptomatic. But the vast majority of people aren't symptomatic. So we have to look at this in the context of, does it improve the lot of patients that are treated? And those are the two points that probably are the most important.
So then you would predict you'd see more responses with the sunitinib, but progression-free survival and overall survival would be similar?
So remember, we go back to what is a response, because that's crucial to this whole discussion. Is response truly a definite endpoint? So oncologists created this artificial thing called objective response to help them evaluate drugs in a phase two setting, to understand which drug might be useful ultimately and which drug should be taken to phase three. The response data don't necessarily predict benefit. So we didn't really create those to help us understand which drug would improve survival, which drug would improve time to progression. And when you look at the two drugs, although the major response, RECIST responses are different, one is 10%, the other is perhaps 30 or 40%. When you look at the number of patients who actually have a decrease in their tumor size, a measurable decrease in their tumor size, it's very similar. It's about 70 to 75%. So overall, the same number of patients benefit. The magnitude may be slightly different in terms of response. But response doesn't necessarily control the progression times nor the survival.